because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's summary of this week in the Capitol. Inaugural day.
Yes.
120 people raised their right hands. Took
their
oath.
Our version of the playoffs, right?
Pardon me?
Our version of the playoffs.
Our version of the playoffs. The governor's inaugural speech. JR, he didn't pick any new fights. He didn't promise any new major tax cuts. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Are you surprised that Governor Walker in his speech, Voss's statement, Steinicke, the assembly majority leader, and then in his press conference, Scott Fitzgerald downplayed the tax cut? I thought they were all going to make room for a tax cut.
Well, where are they going to find the room? I mean, the $2.2 billion number we've talked about before, that's not real. But the real number is about $800 million or so. And that is real. That is a real, honestly, this deficit of, if you just paid what you've got going right now, you got to find that money. So where are they going to find it? Oh, and by the way, Walker wants an alternative raising the gas tax to pay for roads. He's mentioned things like diverting the sales tax from the sale of cars to transportation, or doing more of that. Well, that makes the hole bigger. So how are they going to fill that hole and cut taxes? That's going to be very difficult. I would expect some kind of small property tax decrease that they can say, we're maintaining the trajectory of your property tax will be lower in 2018 than they were when Scott Walker took office. That's, I think, going to be the ultimate message in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, let's listen to a few segments of what the governor said and as he took his second oath of office, and then we'll talk about him a little bit.
Since I last stood at this podium, our state has become more free and prosperous. We took the power away from the big government special interest and returned it to you, the hardworking taxpayers. More people are working and fewer unemployed. School scores have improved and more of our students are graduating from high school. Our retirement system is the only one fully funded in the country. The state's pension and debt ratio is one of the best, and Wisconsin's bond rating is positive. In contrast to the politicians along the Potomac, we get things done here in the Badger State. There is a clear contrast between Washington and Wisconsin. We have been good stewards of the taxpayers' money and lowered their tax burden as well. We've shown why the founders of this great nation looked to the states and not the federal government as the source of hope for this exceptional country. We will not let them down.
Jared, there's a few things I want to talk about. First of all, we took the power away from big government special interest and returned it to you. That was the closest he got to Act 10.
Yep.
And then he laid out the priorities. Education and skills, here I'm reading from a copy of the speech, reduce the size and scope of government. Stay awake, JR, stay awake. Needed infrastructure to support a thriving economy. But he took two whacks at Washington. Were you surprised at that?
No, remember, I mean, election night, what was his speech, you know, about the contrast between Wisconsin and Washington, D.C.? So already then he was talking about it. Now he's talking about it again. What you're kind of seeing is, if you will, ramping up of the details. So the speech on Monday was about the grand vision, I think is what he called it, right? So laid out some general platitudes, we're going to reform education, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. The State of the State on Tuesday, a couple weeks early, by the way, for what we're used to, that's going to add a few more details. You might talk, I think he said he talked about the mergers, for example.
And school accountability and Common Core, excuse me.
So he's going to add some details there. The real enchilada, though, is the budget, which is February 3rd this
February
year.
February 3rd.
More
earliest
than a couple
budget
weeks
yet, yes. Yeah.
So it's a ramping up, if you will, of details. We're getting to the nitty-gritty, if you will. And this is kind of a process for Walker of laying out his argument. You know, it's basically a day in the sun for Governor Walker. It's a victory lap. The whole thing about Walker is a victory lap for these guys to reiterate their message, be back out there. Lots of positive press, the big headlines, the paper, the big picture. It's, you know, a good day for the governor and those guys at once.
Okay, but let's stay on Walker for a minute. Then CNN reports that he hired Rick Wiley to be an Uber advisor for the presidential campaign that he hasn't quite announced yet.
Not yet.
And then just yesterday he says, I'm going to the Iowa Freedom Summit January 24. What does he expect to get out of the Iowa Freedom Summit, which is a year before the Iowa precinct caucuses?
Basically, if you're going to run for president and you want to appeal to the conservatives in Iowa, the Christian conservatives especially, you cannot pass up this summit. I mean, that's the bottom line. All of the names who...
Jeb Bush is.
Well,
Rand Paul is.
Jeb Bush and Rand Paul are not going to appeal to the conservative, evangelical conservative Christian voter in Iowa. That's not their base, if you will. But for Governor Walker, what we keep hearing about from national media is that Walker will have the ability to straddle a line between talking to the social conservatives and the fiscal conservatives and make a coherent argument to both of them, and a credible argument that I hear you and I represent your issues. Now, there are other people like Mike Huckabee who might say, I'm a better representative of evangelical Christians, for example, but Walker has appeal there to both wings, and that's why he's going. He needs to kind of pull those folks in a little bit if he's going to do well in Iowa.
You expect much of the Wisconsin Capitol Press Corps to go? Are you guys going to go?
We have some stringers in Iowa that will hopefully have their covering the event. But, I mean, it's going to be a new thing. Like a side note, covering Walker on the campaign trail. I don't have a big travel budget right now.
Neither do we. But
he's going to some interesting places soon. So New Hampshire's lovely this time of year, I hear.
Yes. Okay, a new issue. The Assembly announces its school accountability package. Mm-hmm. And Voss says it's a number one issue. We want to pass by the end of the month. Let's run through quickly. 3 years of report cards, but the report cards in the year 17-18 would determine whether you go into a what Voss called part two. And
if measures, yeah.
Yeah, excuse me?
The corrective measures.
Yes.
What you're gonna do next.
Thank you. And then if you're a failing public school, they would force you to be an independent charter.
Yeah,
if you're a
failing 4 years.
After the 4 years.
If you don't get out of that corrective measure, you don't meet the goals, 4 years, yes. You become a charter. First they have the DPI put out a request for proposal to outside entities, not your district, outside, to say, do you want to run a charter school here? And
right.
If they say no, if nothing comes back they like, then the district gets the option to run the charter school.
And then after 4 years, well, first of all, you talk about a three-year period.
Mm-hmm.
3 years worth of test scores,
yep.
A, B, C, D, F. Then you have a four-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's interesting, the hammer comes down on charter and choice schools. If they still haven't improved and hit their benchmarks,
yeah.
They lose all tax funds.
So that's a hammer for everybody, essentially, in what the bill is right now.
And is it too big of a hammer for the Senate GOP to accept, e.g. Senator Farrell?
Some of the bigger issues that Farrell's talked to me about have been things like the makeup of the Academic Review Board. This board would have a lot of power under this bill. It'd be able to.
Under the Assembly, 13 members,
yes.
Seven of them Tony Evers would appoint.
Yeah,
excuse me.
One of them hit, one of them's him, plus
yeah.
Six appointees. But it would not only look at what tests you can take, it kind of helped devise all these standards. I mean, it is really a powerful player in this bill. And the choice folks are unhappy because they view Tony Evers being hostile to choice in voucher schools. They think he's going to have seven members of that body, just him and the six appointees, plus the Assembly bill, two Democratic lawmakers will appoint members. They're seeing a body of the supermajority of anti-choice folks.
Yep.
So they're going, hold the phone. Farrell has talked to me today about he wants to look at fewer political appointees to this body, and then two, giving choice in charter schools some kind of voice on it. Now, how that's going to work, still to be determined. But that's one of his issues with the bill. He'll have his own version hopefully next week, he says. Then the Assembly's going to go through its version. Will there be a reconciliation at some point? That's kind of the rub. How do they work out these differences and get something that's the
but
same?
But it's intriguing to me. Farrell is running for Waukesha County Executive.
Mm-hmm.
He has a primary.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he wins that, he has an April 7th general election. Can he devote the time when he's in campaign mode to cutting a deal with the Assembly on the school accountability bill?
Good question. He's not the only one involved. When I've talked to him, he said that Fitzgerald's in the room, Luther Olson's in the room, so they're working together on this draft, if you will. Now, there's no requirement that Farrell resign his seat after April, whatever, if he does win.
That's true. Good.
So
point.
He could stick around until after the budget to make sure there's a seat there, representative, because remember, the Grothman seat, by the way, won't be filled until after April, so watch for that. But anyway, he has some time. He's very favored right now to win that county executive's race. Now, it's not a guarantee, obviously, but of the four, he looks like the most credible candidate. But yeah, it's going to be a challenge for him to be stoking the home fires, being in Madison to do this bill. And, Fitz wants it done right away, too. The whole line's been, this is our first priority in this session, and the Assembly's going to go look at the 20th, the Senate the 27th, and they want to get that bill done as quickly as possible.
And the governor, probably next Tuesday, is going to say the Assembly is making major progress. This remains one of all of our top priorities.
He likes the direction it's heading. That's his line this week.
Right. Meanwhile, let's stay on Fitzgerald. I was so intrigued. It's the first day of the session, and he uses the term mob mentality to describe the state assembly. Now, that's something you and I have heard leaders say later when they're in the middle of disputes over the budget, but on the first day of the session, what was your takeaway?
Sometimes old habits die hard. Voss and Fitz have have had their moments. Now, it's not like they despise each other. Let's be honest. It is not uncommon for the leadership of both houses to not get along that well.
I couldn't agree more.
Even with the governor of their own party, you know, Mr. Decker, Mr. Doyle. So it's not like it's crazy that this is happening. But, yeah, a little bit of a shot there right away. Now, there's some tension. Yeah, if you look behind the scenes, like right to work, what's Voss keep saying? We'll take it up once the Senate passes it.
Senate's got to go first.
Yeah.
Right. But meanwhile, Voss is out in front. He's got point person on GAB. Mm-hmm. That's Dean Knutson. And he's got point person on John Doe. And that's Dave Craig. So do you think the mob mentality comment reflects Fitzgerald's not anger, but a little bit miffed at Voss taking the lead on some of these critical issues?
I think some of it is there's a political reality in the Senate that doesn't exist in the Assembly. I mean, they've got 63 members right now. They had 60. It was last session. They had room to lose people. Fitz doesn't have that, especially last session. We had Schultz in the caucus still. There was not room to lose people like what Voss can do. So Fitz would have to take a much more deliberate approach and make everybody happy. Now, that's difficult, too, when you have lawmakers on the right wing of the caucus who, for example, on Right to Work, don't want to carve out, and people in the middle of the, like, our political spectrum more toward the middle, but on the left of their caucus, saying, well, I'm not sure about this bill in period. I want to carve. It's hard to keep both wings happy on go through mining, any big issue the last couple of years. That's a difficult task. It's a much more difficult environment for Fitz to work in than Voss.
You mentioned Right to Work, which is where I want to go next. I have gone through my notes of Scott Fitzgerald's press conference on the first day of the session several times. He seemed to be saying, yeah, I know I said once I'd like the Senate to take it up early, but he said, I'm not counting votes. No senator has come to me and says I can't support it. It's a very complex issue. And I know the governor doesn't want the, quote, ruckus, close quote. Mm-hmm. Did he knock it off the front burner,
JR? He's been pumping the brakes for a while. I talked to him late last month. He said, well, what I meant was when we take it up is we're going to talk about it. Not to be a vote right away. And I think there was a little bit of a walking back of that comment. I think what fits in his mind, what he meant, and the impression from talking was, I meant we'll talk about it. But the impression from everybody else around him was, whoa, they're doing this.
Second or third week.
Yeah. So that was the impression. And I think he realized that impression wasn't the only one to give. So they're trying to pull it back of, we have to have the discussion now, but there's no guarantee it'll get done. The other thing he was saying was, what? You don't want to do this too close to an election, so next spring is not going to be a great time for Right to Work. There are more complexities of polishing off that issue than what people sometimes think. Well, they say, oh, big Republican majorities. Well, it's not the way it works. Just because you have 18, should be 19 when Grokin seats filled,
yes,
doesn't mean you have a guaranteed ironclad, this bill's going to get done. You have to make people happy. And that's a tough task.
And as you said, Voss is saying, well, I support it. I believe most of my members support it. There's enough votes in the Assembly, but Senate, you go first.
A couple of things. One, why put your house to that vote if you don't have to? That's rule number one in leadership. You don't take pointless votes. Two, the governor has said over and over again, I don't want this as a distraction. So why make the distraction unless you have a guarantee it's going to get done? And three, there is still a segment of the kind of the insiders who believe that Voss doesn't want to get it done because the governor doesn't want to get it done, that there might be some move to be made to sink. Well, Voss doesn't have to do any kind of maneuvers to sink the bill as long as it's stuck in the Senate. He can keep his hands clean. He's true to the cause. We believe in it. We're not going to go first because we're not going to take a vote. We don't need to.
Meanwhile, I was so curious on this issue, Right to Work, just a final comment. I went to the Legislative Reference Bureau. What was a bill number for the Right to Work bills Scott Walker co-sponsored? He wasn't lead sponsor. Mm-hmm. Sue Vergeron was. He was number two on a Right to Work bill in the 93-94 session, but enough for Right to Work. Filing deadline came for the state Supreme Court seat of Ann Walsh Bradley. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be Ann Walsh Bradley, no primary, versus Rock County Judge James Daley. Do you think Ann Walsh Bradley is vulnerable? And let me ask this question before you answer that one. Are we going to see millions of outside spending by third-party groups?
The answer to both those questions is kind of the same. It depends on how much Republican groups want that seat. I talked to Democrats this week who think that Ann Walsh Bradley will raise money. She's been aggressive. She's got Corey Kozlowski, who has been, veteran Democratic operative in Wisconsin. He's come on board to be like communications and advisor role. They've hired the finance director from the State Democratic Party of Wisconsin to come on and be the campaign manager. They think she's going to raise money. She's going to be aggressive. She's going to get up on TV. But they also go, that's great, and that'll be a wonderful thing. But 2 weeks out, if the conservative coalition drops $2 million on TV, that's a game changer. And the conservatives will tell you, yeah, we know we can change the dynamic right away. But is Daley the guy they want to change it for? There are some concerns about him. If you read, like, Mark Belling, for example, the talk show host out of Milwaukee, he ripped him back in the fall over some sentences he handed out saying this guy's not a conservative. He announced his campaign in the middle of October, in the middle of a contested AG and control campaign. Why would you do? Why not wait till after the November election to get right. more attention? He made this comment about, well, there's this case where there's a complaint against Justice Prosser. We should send to Minnesota and have their courts take care of it, which, A, for
can't
a conservative, well, for a conservative, you're thinking, okay, wait, first off, this is an internal matter of the court, and only justices can decide they should step off a case,
right.
number one. Number two, just the Wisconsin court should be taking care of this. And number three, you're going to go outside of our judicial system to another state and ask that, to some folks, is what you call judicial activism. You know, the foundation, if you will, for an activist to approach the courts. So they're kind of going, wait a second, do we want to really work for this guy? The flip side is they don't like Ann Walsh Braley. She's not on their issues. She's not voting with them. She's part of the liberal wing of the court. They go, you know, so do you dislike Ann Walsh Braley enough to spend the money to really give her a run just because you don't like her? That, I guess that's the bottom line of the
But James
decision
Daley,
they have to make.
Vietnam War vet, former former DA, longtime judge. But if you asked, if you did a Charles Franken poll, ever heard of James Daley? No.
Same time, Michael Gableman, before his race.
Okay.
Nobody knew who he was until WMC started dropping big time money on that race, calling Justice Butler Loophole Louie, right? That
right.
was the phrase that, you know, Linda Clifford against Annette Ziegler. What was the ad? I've never been a judge. They pounded that theme. I mean, WMC and its allies have been very good about finding a great message that knocks down those judges or those candidates, makes life difficult for them, and they could do it again.
Meanwhile, staying on the same subject, the Supreme Court, the Assembly had an Assembly Judiciary public hearing on the constitutional amendment that says the Supreme Court justices will pick the Chief Justice. It will no longer be seniority. Mm-hmm. Former Justice John Wilcott's there saying this is not about Shirley Abramson. Well, it most assuredly is, but here's my question. Can both houses act and give second round approval to this constitutional amendment by what Kevin Kennedy says is a deadline, January 27th, because tick, 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 that's coming?
They could. The Assembly should be on the floor the week of the 20th. The Senate, they want to go on Tuesdays in the Senate this session, so that would mean Tuesday the 27th. They could get it done. As long as it's done by midnight, that was the
that's
and
true.
Kevin's email was, even if it's not by close of business, as long as it's on Tuesday, we're okay. So they, in theory, they could. And the side note, Justice Wilcox's comments, obviously, is in 1999, when Abramson was running against Sharon Rose, Wilcox and two others
did
endorsed.
Not endorse.
Yep. There was some tension in the court back then. I mean, this has been going on for a long time. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Justices have had a history of not getting along. It granted in 2011 went beyond what we've all seen before. But this is not unusual for tensions on the court. And you know, the conservatives chafe under Abramson's direction. There's no two ways about it. And they have the majority and go, why is she still in charge?
Well, and just to be clear, they face a January 27th deadline to get it on the April 7th spring ballot.
That's
so,
right.
So that's what we're talking about.
And the voters have to sign off on it, and they'll get their say. You know, it's one of those things that Democrats are like, look, all you're doing is going, so between this and the mandatory retirement age, all you're trying to do is knock off Shirley Abramson. That's basically what their thought is. You're trying to get her out of the Chief Justice's seat, and then B, force her from the court because she's over your mandatory retirement age. Although Knutson this week said it might raise the, you know, the age, so.
Well, but they can do that by statute. They don't need
mm-hmm.
a constitutional amendment.
Yeah, by statute.
To set a mandatory mm-hmm. retirement age for the court. I thought there was a separation of powers, and I thought we had three branches of government, judicial, executive, and anyway. I know you want to talk about Glenn Grothman later, so we'll come back to that, but he, in his first vote, said, I think Speaker John Boehner should stay in the job. He didn't join the 25 dissenters. Surprised?
No, I mean,
an outsider in Glenn Grothman voting for an insider?
Well, Grothman had an interesting comment. He said, what's the point? If you wanted to take him out, you should have done it in November. That's when you should go after, you know, John Boehner and have an alternative. Now is not the time. What did he say? In all my years in the state capitol, Wisconsin, I never once voted against, or I never saw anybody in my party vote against the leader on the floor. You know, that's what he's used to. You have that fight in the fall, you come on the floor in January, this is your guy, or gal, you stick with him. That's bottom line. So it's a rational streak, if you will, for Glenn Grothman. I mean, I think sometimes the national media expect Grothman to be this kind of wild hair on fire guy with, you know what I mean? It's a
yeah.
character almost.
Yeah.
That's not the real Glenn. If you talk to him, he has, I mean, He does say controversial things, but he has deeply held beliefs. You know, he's got a foundation for why he does the stuff that he does.
He does. He does. He has a personal credo. Yeah. Okay, Wisconsin Politics Stock Report. Go.
All right, so rising. So obviously Walker had a good week this week, but I want to give you one a little bit different. Gordon Hintz, a redemption story, if you will. Think back 2011. This guy was a rising star in the party, had future all over him, gets busted in a massage parlor sting, yells, "You're blank dead," to a female
Amy
member.
Amy Sue.
Michelle Lichens, Republican.
You're right. Thank you.
On the floor in the Act 10 debate.
Yes.
It's like all over. This guy is dead in the water, they thought was. 2012, they had a flawed candidate against him. He wins re-election. They go guns ablaze in 2014. Republicans go after him hardcore. He wins. Now he's on joint finance. It's kind of an amazing comeback story for him. And that you look at him and go, okay, why? Well, he has history where he worked for Long Beach, California as a budget and fiscal analyst. He has the foundation, if you will, to do the job. He's also part of the younger wing of the Democratic caucus. And if you look at what Peter Barca dealt with and this challenge from Evan Coyke back in November,
right,
was what? It was the uprising of the young folks. Well, now Peter, this older guy, has got a number two who's a sophomore, Christine Shanklin, and two young lawmakers on joint finance. He's kind of made sure that the young in the caucus is taken care of. So there's a little benefit, if you will, for Peter in that.
What did Democratic Representative Corey Mason do wrong to not get reappointed to finance, just quickly?
But what I've been told, Corey basically said, look, I have better things to do than the short end of 412 votes for another 2 years. I mean, he's got a young family.
Yeah, he does.
Three kids, I think, under the age of six.
Yep.
Said I could do better things in my district and have a better message than constantly being no on 412 votes and lose. It's a grinding process when you're on a four. Go ask Mark Pocan, now Congressman Mark Pocan, about how he felt about a 412 joint finance session, how much fun he had.
Those get really old real soon. Okay, mixed, sir?
Glenn Grothman, he gets his blowback from the national conservative media, like all these guys all talk. But, Glenn, again, this rational streak of, look, this doesn't make any sense. What are you guys doing out there? Other side note, the FEC wants me to clarify a few things with this campaign finance report. Little paperwork, probably nothing too much to worry about. But, one thing about Grothman is we do expect him at some point to have this platform to say a lot of things. There's no point in the doghouse on day one and not getting a platform at all, if you will. Look at what Boehner did. There were some moves to punish some people. Now there's talk in D.C. about pulling him back and they fly. But that doesn't make sense to go take a shot at the king for no good reason on day one.
And falling?
The gas tax. Talk about hiking the gas tax. What did they say this week? Both Fitz and Voss, it's not palatable, not going to happen. The governor said, I'm not too keen on raising the gas tax. So that seems to be off the table. But where does the money come from? That's the big thing. When I interviewed him in the last month, he said one alternative would be to take the sales tax from the sale of cars.
And I think that scores out at more than $400 million.
A year, yes.
Yes.
But it also makes the hole bigger in the general fund.
It does.
So how do you cover that? But that option seems to be off the table. Might you see a mix of, raising the registration fee, possibly, diverting more money, possibly. It's still a matter of how do you cobble it together. The gas tax, though, is off the table, it seems like, right now.
But right now in Madison, gas is selling for $2.099. Yeah. Our gas tax is 30.9 cents a gallon. It hasn't been increased since 2006, and we can't pull the trigger on the gas tax.
And on top of that, if you raise the registration fee, if you take the sales tax on cars, it doesn't hit Illinois drivers or Minnesota drivers or people who come through Wisconsin to vacation. They contribute the gas tax.
Yes.
But the gas tax hike is not a big thing to do. If you're a Republican with your base, talk radio, these guys don't want to see. They're going, look, We elected you to manage our expenses and keep things in line, not to go take more money out of our pocketbook. Yeah, it's $2.09 a gallon, but I want to enjoy $2.09 a gallon for a while. Okay. So I don't expect that to be part of the solution for Governor Walker next month.
Okay, finally, let's preview very quickly the State of the State message on Tuesday. Is he going to, again, as he did in the inaugural, not pick any major fights?
I don't know, but the one Democrat told me this week, I think it's interesting, how much was about Wisconsin, how much is about Washington, D.C.? That'll be interesting to watch with the governor. Does he keep nodding to D.C., or is it a really Wisconsin? It is a state of the state speech.
Yes.
How much is it about the state of Wisconsin?
Good point. Wisconsin politics, the gift that keeps on giving. Yeah. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for January 9th.